Red Line.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and its end-of-the-year program, The Red Line, with me, Andrew Krepko.
And Sergei Sorokin.
This is what we want to highlight as the most important trends of the year, which proved to be extremely thought-provoking, dramatic, and controversial. 2016, the battle for global leadership. The last year of Obama's presidency was marked by a dramatic reduction of U.S. influence in geostrategic regions of the world, such as the Mideast and the Asia-Pacific, while the role of major non-Western powers has grown dramatically. 2016, the world shaken by Trump. Donald Trump's meteoric rise to power was totally unexpected and shocking to many experts, yet it revealed that there is a skyrocketing demand all across the world for new faces and new approaches to global politics. And also, 2016, the death of mainstream media. The passing year proved to be a total mess for the so-called mainstream or respectable media, which failed in its partisan campaigns against Brexit, Donald Trump, and other important events, thereby losing more trust among the public than ever before. So let us come to our first trend to speak about the battle for global leadership. The last year of Obama's presidency was marked by a dramatic reduction of U.S. influence in geostrategic regions of the world, such as the Mideast and the Asia-Pacific, while the role of major non-Western powers has grown dramatically. This is seen most clearly by Russia's successful anti-terrorist intervention in the Mideast and China's pragmatic diplomacy with the ASEAN states. Whereas a year ago it looked like Russia was destined to go to war with Turkey, Moscow and Ankara are now engaged in a very fruitful rapprochement, which has seen them even cooperate in resolving the war in Syria. Likewise, observers would have been forgiven for thinking that China and the Philippines were poised to clash. But both sides are now on their best-ever terms with one another. These game-changing developments point to a clear trend, and it's that the U.S.'s strategic setbacks have made it easier for non-Western states to exert their leadership.
Well, the last year of President Obama's presidency was marked by dramatic decline of American influence in the world. That's obvious thing, that's a global trend, and this is not something that we at Sputnik are saying. This is also the talk of the day in mainstream media also. Everybody is asking what happened to American leadership. I was trying to answer myself to that question. I was trying to compare President Obama with his predecessor, President Bush. And I came to the conclusion, probably you will disagree with me, that President Bush was doing a lot of wrong things, terrible things, like the war in Iraq. But at the same time, he never hesitated. He was persistent, whereas President Obama was another type of president. He didn't know what to do.
Indecisive, dilly-dallying.
He didn't know what to do with foreign politics, you see. It seems he was preoccupied with domestic agenda, things like Medicare, and he was not taking much interest in global politics. That's why if we say take Syria as a textbook example. At one point, he was saying that President Assad lost legitimacy and that he has to be ousted. That was his agenda at the initial stage. Then we had another version of American policy, you know, towards Syria, that they have to fight Daesh. And what happened to Assad? They were trying to revamp the strategy. Then they said that this is a dual strategy.
I'm glad Obama was indecisive.
Ousting Assad and fighting Daesh. But at the same time, look, they simply pulled out from Syria. They don't know what to do, and Russia has to work with that mess.
Okay, yeah, I mean, this is definitely a very important and relevant issue, and that's why we're going to begin by speaking about it to our in-studio guest, Mr. Igor Pelichari. He's a professor at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow, as well as the Luiss University in Rome. Hi, Igor. How are you?
Thank you. Hi. Very well. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So what I want to ask you about, what went wrong? I mean, some people, they like to talk about American overreach, that the U.S. is overstretched, but this has been the theme, I mean, since the end of the Cold War. But did the U.S. finally just overstep a couple steps too far? I mean, what was it that created this these strategic setbacks of the past couple years?
Well, I think it started in 2013. You know, it's all related somehow to the ambition, and you might like it or not, from the Western perspective of Russia getting back as a global player. Now, when you had an international system dominated by one single main actor, and this was the U.S., it was substantially easier. Now, we have not only Russia, but mainly Russia over the last 3 years came back in the game very strongly. Now, I think the West somehow lost a lot of time, first of all, in accepting this, and because a very close club, You don't accept new entrances that easy. And so instead of trying to find a framework agreement, because you need to find a framework agreement with Russia, they just started theorizing the old good Soviet stereotype of the Russians are nuts. So they're just so dedicated to tank you, to answer with a tank every time there is something going around them. So and so we lost some very precious time. In the meanwhile, they lost somehow the development of the Russian political system, which had, in over the last 15 years, we had first 5 years dominated by intelligence. Then the second 5 years dominated by jurists, because the objective was to first to put in the security the country, then to put the country to create a middle class. And the last 5 years we have the diplomats back. So the role of the diplomats in making the foreign policy of Russia is huge. It's really the right answer. And this is somehow pushing, you can see it in the Syria, Sergei, you were saying before, the Syria situation it's emblematic. The U.S. has been approaching that field with too much technology, a lot of drones, and very little intelligence. While Russia has used a lot of, in the first phase, a lot of eradicated intelligence and less technology. And over the alliance system also, Russia has made a sort of state brand that they never change their alliances, whatever it takes. And this is a very strong message sent in the region, while the Americans somehow get lost in translation in their set of alliances. So you see, the Shias, militias, Lebanese, mm-hmm. on the field are much more effective than the Gulf.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the crucial mistakes of the United States has been to delegate too much, not to the locals, which were more the Lebanese Shias, to them. So, and at this point of view, but again, this is what happens when you don't have a framework agreement. I think this could have been all avoided by finding a kind of an agreement which would put in the basket everything. And by everything, I mean Libya. I mean Ukraine. I mean, you know, so we keep mm-hmm. having a lot of new scenarios of confrontation. On some of them, you might say that Russia is right. On some other, it's more wrong. Whatever it takes, you don't have a framework agreement. And now the last press conference of Obama, in which somehow he's still focused in justifying the defeat of Clinton by waving the flag of the Russian intelligence.
Right.
I don't think that's really the point. I think the point there is a confrontation within the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I think that their internal political problems now in the United States are so much overwhelming that they are inevitably less concentrated on the international sphere.
Okay.
Also, I don't think that press conference was really meant to say, you know, we lost because of the Russians, but it's create a framework of justification within the Democratic Party so that the Clinton group doesn't, which is still very strong in the party, doesn't lose totally grip to the future.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to have to move to our next guest in the line. Thank you very much for that. That's Mr. Bryce Swearhoon. He's a researcher at the City University of Hong Kong.
Red Line.
Hello, Bryce. How are you today?
Greetings from Toronto. Pleasure to be here.
Hi. Thanks for coming on our program, as always. I want to ask you kind of the reverse question. So we're looking at how the U.S. has been in retreat over the past couple of years, but at the same time, the U.S. still has the world's most powerful military, and it's the only country that can exercise global reach with this capability. So are we right to even be talking about the U.S. on retreat, or is this all kind of relative?
Well, I think one of the terms that's been applied to American foreign policy in the past few years is dithering. The idea that, as opposed to previous years, the United States, under the Obama administration, seems to be leaving more options on the table, making fewer decisions than they are creating options. And there's different theories as to why this might be taking place. Some have pointed to the growing influence of the National Security Council, which is an office of the White House that's becoming increasingly influential for making decisions that previously would have occurred in some of the line departments like Defense and the State Department. And so there's a concern now that with the growing influence of the White House in the delivery of foreign policy and the sidelining of the State and Defense Departments, that effectively, decision makers throughout the different levels of government have been bypassed. And as a result, you have more meetings taking place in the White House and through sort of high-level decision makers in the White House, but fewer actually decisions being made. And so this is one theory as to why there's been the, sort of a continuing dithering and the appearance of retreat in American foreign politics, when actually what we're seeing in terms of the public administration is a greater centralization of the decision-making processes in the White House and the marginalization of departments that would previously have been much more influential.
Bryce, let me ask you about American leadership. You know, that was an election year, and it triggered the debate on what can be the role of the United States in the world. It seems that President-elect Trump is going to revamp the whole concept. So to what extent do you think he will stick to the idea of American leadership, and how the idea would evolve under Trump?
Well, I think what we've seen emerge with President-elect Trump, particularly in regards to issues such as Taiwan, as you might be aware of the comments regarding the one China policy, I think what we've seen so far in terms of the leadership style that Mr. Trump is bringing, he's not a policy president so far. You know, he's not the sort to sort of refer to a legacy or precedent in terms of foreign policy in the same way that diplomats and public administrators would. And I think the reason for this, especially if we look at the Taiwan situation, you know, he wants to communicate that, you know, you need to deal directly with me. You know, I'm the negotiator. You can't rely on history or precedent or sort of voluminous policy statement. And basically everything is on the table. You know, everything is on the table. Everything can be renegotiated at any time, and that the final buck lies at his desk. So I think what we're seeing now is a lot of uncertainty. Diplomats and foreign policy analysts, you know, the policy wants to sort of depend on sort of all these sort of years of establishing precedent and so forth, are very nervous because of that, because now we don't really know you know, which policies to depend on if everything really is on the table. But it centralizes leadership even more so at the higher levels in the White House particularly. And I think just in regards to my previous comments about the growing influence of White House committees and councils as opposed to, you know, the State Department and Defense Department, it looks like we're going to see even more centralization of this within the executive office. The question is now is, you know, previously the executive office seems to have been dithering and having a hard time actually making decisions. What we see from Trump is that decisions come very quickly.
Yeah, I have to say, I think you really picked up on a noticeable trend with Trump wanting to centralize leadership and kind of move past the dithering of the Obama years. But Bryce, thank you very much for speaking with us today. We are really happy to have you on the program, and you added some very important insight. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, and thank you.
And as our last guest for the section, we're going to move over to speak to Mr. Chris Shipler. He's an American political commentator. Hi, Chris, and thanks as always for coming on our show.
Red Line.
Okay, Chris, so what kind of general countermoves do you anticipate Trump making to make America great again and reverse the geostrategic backsliding of the Obama years?
My answer to that is cancel everything that everybody's been thinking. You know, I read the articles, the comments, et cetera, that everybody is talking about. And I don't think people understand this, but most people look at the U.S. as, okay, we just got the new selected puppet into power, and then U.S. continues on and the deep state continues on around the world. And I'm telling you, this is all going to change. On January 20th, everything changes. As far as an American retreat, I don't think you're going to see an American retreat per se. I think what you're going to see is new commitments, new alliances, new trade deals, new security deals. We're not going anywhere. It's just changing. And I would hope that people understand that this is a positive to the world. Now, the neocons and the deep state, you know, pretty much screwed up the world. I think most people in the world agree with that. Trump does not want to run the world. His focus is to rebuild the United States. But I don't, like I said before, I don't think that means that he's going to retreat from the world. And there's also a lot of things going on around the world that you just can't pull out of because you create massive vacuums. So I think that we're going to see some of the stuff's going to take some time to iron out, so to speak. Other things I think will happen very quickly, especially in terms of, you know, trade and industry and those types of things. You know, if you think about it, and I don't know if people understand this, but bad trade deals in the U.S., if you think about when this really started, was, you know, Bill Clinton's era with NAFTA And there's many more trade deals than just NAFTA. But the whole thing, it has literally bled tens of trillions of dollars out of this economy. And, you know, we're sitting at 95 million Americans out of the workforce and massive, you know, debt and unemployment and people on welfare. And that's the number one focus of the Trump administration. You know, you look at his economic team that he's put together, and obviously, you know, the left is going psychotic over this situation, you know, because it's a bunch of very successful billionaires. But the whole concept is that this is one of the best economic teams that we've ever seen in an administration. And the goal of this, and he's building this new economic forums desk. It's almost like a new department in the White House, where their number one goal is, how do we make America great again? That's it.
Okay, Chris, as always, that was very informative and very detailed. Thank you. Okay, Sergey, just to wrap everything up, I think that we agree that, there is definitely this perception of an American American setbacks all across the world under the Obama administration, but that Trump is going to, as our guest Bryce said, centralize leadership, and as Chris told us, that, you know, everything changes January 20th, so everything we're talking about now might just literally be ancient history by the time Trump enters in office, because that guy's going to move fast.
Absolutely, and Americans still has to answer the question whether they want American leadership, and if they want American leadership, whether they can afford themselves.
Okay, so we're going to thank all of our guests for participating today in this very interesting discussion, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Igor Pelichari. He's a professor at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow, as well as the Luiz University in Rome. We also spoke to Mr. Bryce Swearhoon, a researcher at the City University of Hong Kong. And last but not least, we have Mr. Chris Schipper on the line. He's an American political commentator. Following in our program, we have 2016, the world shaken by Trump, and 2016, the death of mainstream media. Stay with us.